peeling back the layers of the onion on the Newtown school shooting. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Barry, I am glad to be back with you, and I'm very interested in covering this topic. Barry, once again, we find ourselves in the midst of something horrible, and the first thing that happens is the President of the United States comes out and attempts to politicize it, and once again, turns the spotlight on himself regarding everything he's going to do to make sure this never happens again, which is, of course, a ridiculous promise.
Well, I don't know about you, Chuck, but I feel so much more at ease and secure and safe knowing that the federal government, specifically President Barack Obama, is personally going to make sure that nothing like this ever happens again. Don't you feel that we could just go on our merry way in life and not ever worry about this anymore?
Well, Barry, the key word there is feel. Some people are being made to feel that he really is going to take charge and make things happen. But the fact is, I think that the real problem is that this is a multifaceted issue, and it has more to do with the breakdown of how society and morality interact, and especially biblical morality, than anything else. I think what we're seeing is the outcropping from a young man who was confused about a number of things, was already mentally unstable, was thrown into a world where basically human life is worthless. I mean, if you think about it, Barry,
yeah.
I heard someone, people were going to accuse me of politicizing the horror as well, and I'm not. What I'm going to say to you is the fact that that classroom had 20 children in it. Had there not been abortion in the United States, there would have been 30 in it.
True.
Now, not necessarily, because they probably would have had more teachers to handle the extra kids. But what I'm saying is that half of what should have been, one half again of what should have been there, were missing because they'd been murdered in their mother's wombs. And the fact is that we are showing a great deal of emotion, as we should, because these are dead children. These are not a group of traitors who were rounded up and shot. These were not criminals who were put to death for heinous crimes. These were little kids who's probably the worst thing they've ever done is stolen a nickel out of one of their little friend's coin purses or some other, maybe were mean to somebody on the playground, some minor sin that does not carry a death penalty specification. And they were murdered by someone who was clearly mentally deranged. So it's a very confusing time. I really don't need to see interviews with people where media types run up with a microphone and a camera and say, stick the microphone in a parent's face and say, your child has just been murdered by a crazed mass murderer. How do you feel? And yet we're going to be shown picture after picture after picture after picture on the news for weeks to come because there's a political agenda at play behind the reporting of this tragedy. And we cannot kid ourselves. It's undeniable, Barry. There is an agenda to ban guns when, in fact, guns are not the issue. It's people.
Well, absolutely, Charles. And we've already seen it because you have a growing list of United States senators who are jumping on the gun ban bandwagon. Dianne Feinstein, Senator from California, has promised immediately upon the reconvening of the next session of Congress in January that the first bill that she'll introduce is a bill banning what she considers to be assault weapons, which right now that definition's very vague and could be very interesting. She tries to soften the blow by saying, well, there will be over 900 exemptions in there. Well, okay, Charles, if there's 900 exemptions, my guess is these are for guns that are actually out of circulation as collectibles and not so much as actual useful firearms. But you've got a number of these situations that are coming up.
Well, let's talk about this just for a sec. I don't want to hijack the show and take it this direction. But if you recall, we have done shows where we've talked about the difference between positive and negative law.
Oh, absolutely.
Wherein positive law, negative law is necessarily short. Essentially, what it says is everything up to here you're permitted to do. Everything out, basically, beyond that point, you just can't do this and this. Mm-hmm. So negative laws tend to be short.
Right, very much so.
They tend to be very permissive. beyond this point, you just can't go, but you, everything up to there you can do. We don't want to know about it. Positive law, on the other hand, says everything is forbidden except this and this and this and this. And it gets very lengthy because what you have to do is you have to put in exceptions.
That's right.
What Dianne Feinstein is proposing is what's called a negative law, or a positive law.
Positive law, that's correct.
She's going to, in order to make it look like she's allowing for collectors to keep their weapons, she's going to ban guns, but they're going to put in exceptions. Everyone should look at that and say, that is not acceptable. Now, having hijacked as far as I want to hijack, we should probably move along.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Chuck, because, again, the two key things are that most people are, at least the media, I should say, not most people, but the media is feeding on emotion, and they are sensationalizing this. Now, granted, I don't want anybody to misunderstand that I'm taking lightly the deaths of 28 people. It is a tragedy. It is something that is regrettable. It is something that, honestly, Charles, it would have been preventable because, and I saw this in an article the other day, and if we find it again, then we'll put it up on our website. But it was about a presentation by Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman. Now, Grossman is the country's foremost expert on the psychology of killing. I mean, he's written books. He's a West Point professor, and he goes around the country and trains law enforcement and others. Actually, Chuck, I think you and I have both sat in on a David Grossman seminar at the Education Policy Conference that we've gone to in the past. But Lieutenant Colonel Grossman said, listen, how many children in the last decade or so have been killed by fire? And the answer is none. Why? We take all kinds of precautions. There are sprinkler systems in the ceilings. There's asbestos tiles there. There's double thick walls that are coated for fire retardant. There are exit signs. There's an actual fire plan to get kids out in case of a fire. But there's really no pre-planning or pre-thought about what happens if somebody comes in to do harm to people inside the building. And so law enforcement ends up having to come in after the fact, where the firemen actually get to come in because all the precautions have already been taken. And one of the most simple precautions that could be taken is training some of the staff at the school, and this is presuming a school like an elementary school that wouldn't have what they call a school resource officer, which is actually either a uniformed or a plainclothes police officer standing in the halls, who know how to use a firearm and have one on their person. You know, there's references to the shooting that happened in Pearl, Mississippi a few years back. Well, that shooter didn't get very far because an adult, one of the employees of the school, had his firearm with him and stopped that massacre from happening because of using the defense of a trained citizen who had his firearm not taken away from him in what we call gun-free zones, which all of our schools are, Chuck.
Oh, absolutely, Barry. And in fact, an article in National Review that we have really, we're sort of keying off, the author of that piece, who is John Fund, makes the statement that almost all public policy discussion about Newtown has focused on a debate over the need for more gun control. In reality, gun control in a country that already has 200 million privately owned firearms is likely to do little to keep weapons out of the hands of criminals. We would be better off debating two taboo subjects: the laws that make it difficult to control people with mental illness, and the growing body of evidence that gun-free zones, which ban the carrying of firearms by law-abiding individuals, don't work. And that is absolutely true. They do not work. Over and over and over again, we find that no gun zones, Barry, are magnets for people who are looking through the lens of their insanity to kill as many people as possible. Now, you know what another article I've read today, and I'm going to try to find it again. I thought I saved it, and I did not. Was the fact that in virtually every case, when a mass shooter is confronted by an armed citizen, he generally commits suicide in almost every case. Not every single case, but in virtually every case, when he's finally cornered or trapped by someone. Let me give you a for instance, and this is where this came from. The Clackamas, Oregon shooter. Someone in that mall was a concealed carry person. He pulled his gun, made it clear that he was going to shoot, and that guy, that shooter, gave it up and shot himself. Now, that points to a certain psychology.
Yes, it does.
that guy was going to shoot everybody he could and then himself. At that point, it became clear that someone else was going to kill him, and his ego would not allow that to happen.
Yeah, he had to go out on his own terms. As you see in many of these instances, many of these shooters come in here knowing, first and foremost, that they're not going to be facing any kind of armed resistance whatsoever. Everybody from the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting to these mall shootings to the school shootings, because the vast majority of these places that they pick are what we consider gun-free zones, or what I like to call victim-rich zones, or VRZs, because people are law-abiding citizens, many of whom have concealed carry permits and lawfully and with a deep measure of respect for and understanding of the power of the weapon that they carry, are not in those areas. They're not allowed to come in. You're not allowed to bring your gun into a gun-free zone. And so therefore, many of these individuals, being cowards at heart, look to pick on the weak and the helpless. And that's why they pick people who are in a defenseless position or who are physically unable to defend themselves like children.
Oh, absolutely. And, well, let's also take into account the fact that many of them are, in their insanity, have a twisted sense of reality, and a very large percentage of them, from what I can tell, nobody's talking about this much. It's one of those taboo subjects, Barry. But the fact is that a lot of these younger people who are becoming mass shooters are addicted to violent video games, wherein, not just violent, you know, I've played video games where stuff happened. I played Duke Nukem and Wolfenstein and all that stuff. And was there, you were essentially killing monsters. You weren't killing human beings. You were killing Nazis who were, you know, these monster things and all kinds of stuff like that. Okay. Nonetheless, there was violence and there was gore in those. However, I have full control of my faculties. Some of these kids don't. And the new games are basically assassination games.
Yes,
very
they
often
are.
Mass assassination games. Hitman, Call of Duty. We actually, at lunch the other day, we went through a list of them.
Assassin's Creed. These are all the very popular games. Grand Theft Auto. They just go on and on, Charles. Basically, what makes a game popular is the higher the body count, the more creative ways of dispatching people, and how much immorality and lasciviousness you can put into a video game.
And the point is that these people immerse themselves in quote-unquote virtual reality, and they begin to lose, because their minds don't work correctly, they begin to lose themselves in the idea of what's real and what isn't, and mixing the two things up and finding themselves having difficulty getting out of one and into the other, or differentiating between the two, and they've already got a built-in cultural irreverence for life, as we began the program with, and that leads to serious consequences in certain individuals. This is one of the reasons why people always come out and say, well, you can't do this, and you can't ban these games, and you can't do that. Well, you want to ban guns, but you don't want to ban games. Now, look, I don't want to ban games either, but the fact is that parents have sort of lost control over the situation, and the fact is, there's a big push on because this woman pulled her kids out of school, and this kid out of school and homeschooled him. Well, she wanted to homeschool him because what the school's solution to everything, I don't know this particular case, but I'm certain it was to drug him into submission. Basically to drug him to the point where he was semi-conscious the whole day so they could control him. And she didn't want that. She wanted to give her son a chance to try to live a normal life.
What?
And he repaid her by murdering her, sadly.
Yes, it is sad. It is sad, Chuck, and you are hitting on something very interesting here, because the media, again, they're playing on emotion. They immediately tried to spin this as, first of all, that she was some kind of paranoid survivalist who was thinking the end of the world was coming. And, well, obviously, even we had reports that, well, she was teacher's aide in the school, and that's how he got into the school. None of that was absolutely true. She was a financial services professional who was concerned about her children and concerned about her son, whom they've tried. He had been seeing counselors since he was like a freshman in high school, and they have tried everything they do, as parents do try to do for children who are suffering with illnesses, whether they be mental or physical illnesses, and that it just happened that on that day, he decided to take an extreme course.
And unfortunately, we're going to have to finish this discussion tomorrow. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.